This is Those Who Show Up Decide with Paul, Master Sergeant Chez Sanchez, creating storms of thought wherever he goes, flooding his environment with provoking personality and persuasion. He doesn't want you to think like him. He just wants you to think. He knows that only those who show up decide. And now for your host, Master Sergeant Chez.
And good morning, sports fans. Here we are, another Saturday morning, bright and early. Lots of stuff to talk about today. As usual, I am pre-recording my show. I'm doing it on a Thursday night on the 7th of July. But, of course, the show is airing on the 9th of July, and I'm hoping you're having a beautiful Saturday morning. I've got lots of stuff to talk about, as I said. One of the things I'm going to talk about, actually, is an event that I am going to be at in just a couple of hours after this show ends. So keep an ear to that. Maybe you can come down and say hi to me and tell me why I'm either a genius or a complete buffoon. And I'm sure there's plenty of you that would want to say either one. Let's talk about what we're going to be doing. Today's show will have a question about Truman's decision way back in 1945. Anybody who's a history buff will know exactly what I'm talking about. And how that decision that he made in 1945, particularly August of 1945, applies to today and could be brought into play with the question of what to do about ISIS and should we or shouldn't we. Second, we'll have two beefy conspiracy theories relating to our national level politics. And of course, we'll have our flag segment. We will have lost and restored faith in humanity. And then we will have the next thing. I really hate to call out fellow news sources and entities within our big basin, but you know, the Daily News did a number, and they have a headline that really blows my mind. I'm going to talk about that. That actually involves the event that I'm going to be at here in a couple hours, but I'm going to be talking about biased reporting by the Alamogordo Daily News about the two events that are coming up here in just a couple of hours. And, of course, our new undersheriff. I will also be debuting a hopefully new and recurring segment in my show, which I think I'll start to try to close my show with, which is called, it's a book that I was going through and moving my office. I found a book sitting around. It says 1001 Dumbest Things Ever Said. And it's actually not a book about me. I'm stunned. But in the meantime, what it is it's just random stuff edited and with an introduction by Stephen D. Price, whoever that is. And but it's got some doozies in here, so I'm actually just going to read the back cover to you today. It's got about four really juicy quotes on there that hopefully you'll enjoy. And then in the future, at the end of the shows, I will close with some of the dumbest things ever said according to this book, because I just find that stuff amusing. So before we get too far into our show, I'm going to pay a quick bill. I'm going to give a quick shout out to my good friend Louis, Chris, Tookie, and Don over with Most Wanted Mobile Detailing. They will come to you. They'll clean everything from your kid's trike all the way up to full road paving equipment, whatever it takes. If it's got wheels, blades, skates, you name it, they'll wash it. They'll clean it all at reasonable prices. And they are mobile, as I said. They will come to you. Contact Louis and the rest of the guys at 575-415-0256. That is 575-415-0256. Tell Louis Mass Sergeant Chez sent you. And with one of the bills paid, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to roll straight into our international news and the barbarians of ISIS. I try really hard to not let these guys get to me, but their barbarism is so unbelievably excessive that they make Genghis Khan look like the Weebelos, which, for those of you that are older like me, may remember was the actual group of Boy Scouts before the Cub Scouts. So you get to be a Weebelo, then a Cub Scout, then a Boy Scout, if I remember correctly. Either way, these guys are just animals, and they end up hijacking my show fairly often because of their barbarism. But I'm actually going to make a point today because I had a chat with a very good friend of mine. Nice shout out to Lynn there. And one of the subjects that we talked about today was the idea of what would you do to stop ISIS. So this is where I'm going to bring our President Harry Truman into the picture. Back in July 1945, United States government operating under a project called the Manhattan Project detonated the world's first atomic bomb approximately 20-30 miles northwest from where I am sitting right now here in the Tularosa Basin at a location now that we know as the Trinity Site. And they detonated the bomb, proved it could work, loaded a couple on a boat, shipped it over into the Pacific, and on, I believe it was August 7th, or August 6th, I'm not sure which, but anyway, on that date in early August, President Truman ordered the Army Air Forces to bomb with the atomic bomb the Japanese city of Hiroshima. 2-3 days later, they then bombed the city of Nagasaki. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is when you are in war and you decide what weapons of war you are going to use to defeat your enemy, you of course have to determine why are you guys at war and what is the point, to what extent do you want to defeat them? Is it a political purpose? Are you trying to take over a country? Are you invading? Are you defending? So with all those concepts in mind, we historians have written many books of the information that was presented to Truman that led to his decision. The basic outline that the general public knows today is that Truman was faced with the choice of ending World War II in the Pacific by invading the Japanese islands, which it was widely believed at the time that it would cost hundreds of thousands of lives in American soldiers and Allied soldiers, and millions of lives in the Japanese islands, mainly for the reason that it was believed that the Japanese revered their emperor to such an extent as a god that they would fight to the very last man, woman, and child. And the theory would be that if you bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki and obliterated those cities with the power of the atomic bomb, that then the Japanese islands would surrender. And yes, you would kill well over 100,000 people, not to mention the disease and radioactive poisoning and future mutations in the genetics of the Japanese people in those areas. You would have that effect and impact, but you would potentially save millions of lives from the invasion. Now, you know, the expression that I'm sure was used at the time was only time will tell whether it was a good or a bad decision. There is no decision that takes lives that is a good decision. If I was President Truman, would I have made that decision? I don't know. I wasn't President Truman, and I'm not looking at that intel. I would generally probably lean towards a yes on that because of the ancient question of, and you can apply any disease name to it, but I'll use cancer. There is virtually no one on the planet that doesn't know someone, a friend, and certainly probably in their family, that has not had a bout, a scare, or died from cancer. So the question becomes, if you had the ability, the power, that you could cure cancer instantly, permanently, worldwide, obliterate cancer as a disease, but the cost of doing that is you would have to personally kill one innocent child, could you do it? Would you do it? So with that question, you know, that there's a lot of factors that go into there. Is it your child that you have to kill? Is it your child that has the cancer? Generally speaking, if you have no connection on either side, is a random innocent child, and you have no connection to cancer, you would take the more global look at the situation and say, you know, if by killing this innocent child, I save humanity, well, That's the discussion of the greater good. Then the question becomes, if you've answered that, yes, I would kill that child, would you kill 100? Would you kill 1,000? Where's the line? And many people have many different lines. My belief in myself is that if it was for the greater good of humanity, the billions of people we have on this earth, to save them from the scourge of cancer, I would kill that innocent child, and I would burn in hell for it, I'm sure. But I would have done the greater good. I would hope that there would be a better answer than that, but if that was the choice, that's what I would do. Now, with that said, let's apply the logic of the greater good, apply the decision Truman made back in World War II in the Pacific about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and let's fast forward to 2016 with our good friends, the barbarians of ISIS, who, you know, with the Islamist extremists, not only do they say to the rest of the world's religions and people, you either believe in the exact precise form of Islam that we believe, or you die. And if you leave our religion, you die. And if you blaspheme towards our religion, you die. There is some allowance that if you're a Christian and you pay a tax to be a Christian, which I'm sure is like all of your income, then you can continue to be a Christian, but you have to obey Sharia law. So, and if you don't, you die. So pretty much almost any path with ISIS and people that are affiliated with ISIS and their particularly insane form of religion, not particular religion, just religion period, is you either convert or die. So with that said, as I've said many times on this show and many times on my Those Who Show page, you cannot negotiate with someone that is intent on killing you no matter what. Now, if there was another option than them killing you, well, then you could negotiate. If they wanted land, if they wanted this, if they wanted that, then maybe there would be a discussion to say, you stay there and you be insane in your little area, and we'll be insane in our little area, and we'll just leave each other alone. But these people want to take over the entire world and kill anyone that doesn't agree with them. And oh, by the way, because of the various sects of Islam, they attack each other. They blew up a bomb in Baghdad this week that the death toll is now up to 281. They bombed the airport in Istanbul, Turkey. That took out 45 plus. Bangladesh, 20 plus. In Saudi Arabia, set off 3 bombs, claimed 4 lives, a low count for them, but it was right nearby some of the holiest sites in Islam that they bombed. And when they can't even reconcile and not kill fellow travelers within their own religion, what do you think they're going to do to you? So with all of that, I could go on for hours and hours about my love or lack thereof for ISIS and my absolute belief that they simply need to be ended. Let's now bring the question. I'm going to write a little article on this and post it on my Facebook page, Those Who Show Up Decide. I encourage you to listen to what I'm about to say, then go to my page, look at the editorial, I guess we'll call it, that I'm going to write there, and then you get to answer this question. The question being, in the caliphate that ISIS claims, that's their territory where everybody within that state is under the rule, the thumb, the tyranny of ISIS. Within that, hypothetically, it is believed that Raqqa, which is a city in that area, I believe it's in Syria's area, but it could be Iraq. Either way, in Raqqa is their capital. Now, if you were the president and you could drop a nuclear weapon that would obliterate Raqqa, but not the entire Middle East, we're just talking the, I don't know, 20 square miles or whatever it is for the city of Raqqa, for the capital of ISIS, would you do it? Now, there's two sets of intel that you have to work off of here to make this decision. Let's talk about the pros for doing it, and then we'll talk about the cons. The pros for bombing Raqqa would be that you would hopefully destroy a majority of their command and control structure, their military structure, maybe even a large portion of their financial structure and governance that is headquartered there in the capital city. So you would just take a huge chunk out of them. With any luck, you would also take out huge amounts of ISIS fighters, as well as the heads, the generals over ISIS. So that would be a huge benefit, and I think that would make it fairly easy to make the decision to bomb and obliterate Raqqa with a nuclear weapon. Let's talk about some of the cons. Number one con, you don't know that you're going to hit... Well, I'm going to use something else for my number one con. My number one con is that in Raqqa, there will be children. There will be innocent men and women that are almost certainly adhering to the Sharia law of the version of Islam that ISIS believes in, but they can't escape. So they do what they have to do to survive, but they are not true believers in ISIS. So when you nuke and you completely obliterate a city, you will kill thousands of innocent people. Huge con. Number two con. There is no guarantee that you are going to be able to take out the vast majority of the leadership of ISIS, especially in an organization like ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram. They are under a cell structure, and within the cell structure, of course, they decentralize the majority of their of their operations. So blowing up Raqqa is not necessarily going to destroy ISIS, even as an organization. Forget about the individual members, who we'll get to in just a moment. Now, a pro for destroying Raqqa, by the way, that I left out in the beginning, is making the point to whoever is in ISIS that lives, you would hopefully make the point that we are prepared to destroy you without mercy, without caring, because that's what you're going to do to us, is you're going to kill us without mercy, so we have no choice but to end and obliterate you. That would be the point that you would hope would be made. Now, on the negative side of that particular pro comes the absolute, almost certain, I would bet the house on it, con that it is well known that there are ISIS fighters, refugees, terrorists that have come through into Europe, into the United States, thousands of them. This is a well-known fact. If you were to destroy the one city of Raqqa, this would absolutely enrage beyond reason those terrorists. And any plans they thought about doing that they had been preparing, or even if they were just intended to be a sleeper for X amount of time until they were activated to actually do something, these people would go nuts. And you would see every attempt at every possible terrorist act across the Western world. So you know, you bomb Raqqa and destroy that, it will set off a massacre of really biblical proportions in various spots throughout Europe and the United States. So that's a hard decision. But at the same time, how do you get them to stop when they're killing people by the hundreds every month? And I'm not talking about in head-to-head battle. We just retook Fallujah. Iraqi army with U.S. support just retook Fallujah. Others, I believe Mosul was also retaken recently, or is in the process of being retaken. These are head-to-head battles where you have fighter upon fighter. That's war. Terrorist actions are not war. Bombing another person's capital, hopefully just the military targets, that is war. Obliterating an entire city, as we did the United States in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that's not war. That's terrorism, that's genocide. And yes, I'm saying that, that the United States did that. And historians and many people will argue with me for ever that it was the right thing to do. I'm not saying it was the wrong thing to do. I would have almost certainly made the same decision for the greater good. But that is the question, the cost, the price. So the question now is, with these things considered, with the innocent civilians, with the virtual guarantee that by destroying Raqqa, you will set off, as I said, terrorist acts of biblical proportions across the world. With those concepts in mind, with no guarantee that you're actually going to truly knock out the bulk of ISIS and the bulk of their command and control, with those factors in mind, would you nuke Raqqa? My answer is we can't win this discussion, nor this war, period. There is no win that I see for it when they are so far and wide spread out and we are simply trying to survive. So when you consider those two things, I don't think there's a win, period. Whether you, if you do nuke them and they go berserk across the globe, you lose. If you don't do it, they're still going berserk across the globe and you still lose. With those two things, I think Master Sergeant Chez is going to have to weigh in 55% to nuke Raqqa and 45% to not. It's not a slam dunk for me by any stretch. And if I was president, I would have to see massive amounts of intel, information, etc., to make that final decision. But based on what we know, I think that would be my choice. It is a very sick and unfortunate choice. I know that. I would burn in hell for it. But again, as I said, in talking about killing the innocent child, if it was for the greater good of humanity, and at this point with this particular group of people and their particular belief in their particular sect slice of their religion, I don't see that we I don't see that we have any other choice. So I'm going to post a rant or a editorial about this on Those Who Show Up Decide. I encourage you, if I have caused you to think, which of course is always my objective, I don't want you to think like me, I just want you to think. If I have caused you to think and decide I'm a complete idiot, which many people do, or if you have decided maybe I'm onto something or somewhere in between, I encourage you to read that post of mine. I encourage you to comment on it for, against. Please do not just call me an idiot and move on. What I would much prefer you do is to actually post your reasoning for why you agree with me, disagree with me. Let's also avoid the racist terms that can be used towards their religion and their people, etc. Let's keep it on tack. They are ISIS. They are Islamic extremists. They are terrorists. They are murderers. They are barbarians. And what would you do if you were king for a day to solve this problem? So that's the question of the day on here on Those Who Show Up Decide. I'm looking forward to your responses. All right, so we'll see about that this week on Those Who Show. Enough about that. Let me do a quick shout out after that horribly depressing and disturbing subject. I'm going to try to make something upbeat right now. And I want to give a shout out to my good friends Devin and Chris down at MDC Computers, who are the ones absolutely to blame for me being on the air today and on Facebook and all everything else that I am involved with, because it is the computer that allows me to reach out and touch you. Hopefully touch your mind, sometimes touch your heart, depending on what the situation is. But it is Devin and Chris down at MDC Computers. They are on the corner of White Sands Boulevard and 10th Street, directly across from the Wells Fargo, in that small little strip mall there. Their phone number is 575-437-7600. That's 575-437-7600. They just posted on their Facebook page that they have a brand new gaming package, a computer that I think will do everything but bring you drinks. It might even do that. But if you're a gamer, take a look at that package because it's pretty huge. And from what little I know about that level of computing, it seems to be a relatively reasonably priced package. At the same time, they maintain all my computers. They handle my antivirus for me, so I don't have to worry about it. If I have a problem, I bought my daughter's laptop through them. If it's computer, if it's electronic, and it has anything that plugs into a computer, I talked to Devin and Chris. They take care of it. Please keep them in mind for all your computing needs. Now let's roll, and we're right at the half-hour point. I'm going to go hopefully fairly quickly through the national news, even though there's two really beefy things, but we only have a half hour left, and I let ISIS get the better of me today. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you a short little post that I did on my Those Who Show page. It was in response. Let's see, I posted this on Tuesday when FBI Director Comey announced Tuesday that despite evidence Hillary Clinton was extremely careless in her handling of classified emails, they will not advise criminal charges. And of course, by now, all of you should know that Loretta Lynch then backed that up and said they will not prefer charges. And for most intents and purposes, Hillary's off the hook. So here was my response to that article on Tuesday. I started with, number one, why are you surprised? Number two, as of now, I'm going to have to call the election, and I mean the general election, right past the conventions, the general election in November for Hillary. The Republican Party is about to implode and split over Trump. The Dems are having a party over Hillary being cleared. They will unite behind her, and the right will split. I have three scenarios that I've got my little conspiracies on what is going to happen. Number one, the old guard Republicans will succeed in letting the delegates vote for whom they wish. There's a huge movement out there in the Republican Party to release all delegates before the first round of voting. And if that first ballot is a free-for-all, Trump will not win that nomination, in my opinion. Now, if they release those delegates and get them to vote for who the delegates want to, my opinion, Trump loses, and whoever, Ted Cruz, Rubio, Jeb Bush, whoever wins. Trump will then have a hissy fit and run a third-party campaign that only will succeed in splitting the vote amongst conservatives, amongst Republicans, amongst the right, paving the way for Hillary to win. Scenario number two, Trump keeps the GOP nomination and the old guard Republicans fund their own third party candidate, which, by the way, there are people out there seeking a third party candidate. There's a Marine General Mathis that has, his name has been bounced around quite a bit for that particular role. I don't think he wants to do it. I don't see why he would want to do it, but I think he would make an excellent president. But the old guard Republicans fund their own third party candidate and thus splits the vote for Hillary to win. So there's two splits. Scenario number three, Trump keeps the nomination or the old guard takes it from him, but no one runs a third party. But either the old guard or Trump supporters that would normally go to the convention and they would stay home, that they would normally vote for whoever the Republican nominee, they get fed up with the entire thing because Trump got it or because the old guard got it, and they just say, the hell with it, nobody cares about us. See, that's the thing about Trump that I believe is that Trump brought out many disenfranchised on the right, and I've said the same on the left with Bernie Sanders. But if either of these groups win and keep the Republican nomination and no one runs a third party, everybody's just going to stay home. And in that case, the election will go to Hillary Clinton because she'll have the numbers. The Democrats, I'm sure, will get out the vote as madly as they possibly can. I could be wrong about all three of these. But let me add one other thing in here. Oh, and by the way, when Trump announced way back when, I floated the idea on my page, Those Who Show, which you can scroll way down to whenever it was that Trump announced, that he's really a Hillary plant to divide the GOP. The idea there was, it is well known that Trump used to support the Clintons for many, many decades, and there's even an alleged statement out there. It's one of those things I'd have to check out on Snopes and PolitiFact to see if it's true. But allegedly, Trump said back in the 90s, I think, the best way to split the Republican Party is to become a Republican, for him to run for president, splitting the party and giving Clinton a win. He said that allegedly said that. I haven't checked it. I don't know if it's true. But that has been a belief of mine for a very long time, is that his intent all along was to create the situation on the right that has been created. So with that said, you know, Trump could actually intentionally continue to be as racist and misogynistic, I think is the wrong way to pronounce it. In other words, the big he-man woman hater that he is, and intentionally throw the actual nomination and the presidency, and it will go to Hillary, because so many people, certainly on the left, and many, many people, including myself on the right, are so disgusted with him as being the nominee. It is unreal, unbelievable, and revolting. Now, so with that said, that I wrote, of course, in response to Tuesday's event where the FBI declined to advise the Attorney General to press charges. And then, you know, the very next day, of course, Loretta Lynch just jumps in there and says, I'm going to follow their direction, which is what she has been saying all along, is she will follow whatever the direction is from the FBI. If the FBI says charge her, she'll charge her. If it says don't charge her, she won't charge her. Well, the FBI said don't, and she didn't. No big surprise there. It was just a formality for her to announce that. But wait, let's go back a week. I think it was this past weekend on Sunday when Loretta Lynch happened to land at Phoenix Airport. And guess who else was there? Bubba himself, Slick Willie, the Big Bill, the Big Willie, whatever you want to call him, Bill Clinton, Hillary's husband, was at the same airport. Did they have an event? No. Did they go to dinner? No. What did they do? They met, I believe, oh, I want to say Bill went to Loretta's plane. I can't be sure. Allegedly, they released a statement about it once it was out in the press, that all they talked about was grandkids and skiing and all kind of fun times like that. Of course, the Attorney General would never have a conversation with a former president directly about his wife's pending possible charges in her email and treasonous secrecy case. I can't believe for one second that that occurred, but I'm bummed. And if you believe that, I've got a great deal on the Brooklyn Bridge for you, and some California coastline right in Nevada. And a few other things if you're interested. I think I've actually got a deal on the Hoover Dam for you. Either way, boys and girls, you take that for what it will. Of course, the Dems are going to believe everything that it says. The conspiracy theorist right won't believe a dang word of any of it. All I'm going to lay down on is, number one, yeah, I'm going to go with the conspiracy theorist right. Either the Clintons have had the most unbelievably, horribly miscalculated and discussed life since Whitewater, all the way back with the vast right-wing conspiracy out to get them, which they are completely innocent of, and all the various deaths of people like Vince Foster and the plane that got shot down with, oh, I want to say it was an attorney general, I'm probably wrong, I think it was Rob Brown back in Bosnia. No, people, there's nothing to see here. Just move along. All these connections, they don't exist. You're just a bunch of nut jobs out there. But, you know, with then, of course, Director Comey testified before Congress. I think it was today, on Thursday, and a lot of discussion about how she mishandled, blatantly disregarded rules, things like that. But she didn't mean it. We don't think that she intentionally did it. That, to me, was the takeaway from that testimony. And as soon as the FBI and the Attorney General concluded their case, the State Department, who had had an Inspector General case that they opened, I want to say last year, they had suspended it, I think it was in January, when the FBI officially opened their case so that the State Department case would not interfere with the FBI case. Well, now the FBI case is done. The State Department has reopened their internal investigation with the IG, as far as Clinton's emails of her aides, etc., and whether any internal action from the State Department should or should not be taken. Of course, you can expect that particular investigation to take, oh, I don't know, a year or two. And as soon as it's done, Hillary will be president. And the aides that also helped her violate national security directives, they'll be the national security director. I wonder if that's going to be a problem at that point. And this doesn't even talk about the Clinton Foundation. Boy, I could do days on that. I have depressed myself beyond reason, and we're starting to run a little short on time. So I'm going to do something that's going to restore my hope in humanity and life and the patriotic nature of our country. And I'm going to play our flag segment for this week. As soon as it's over, I'll be back and we'll head into lost faith and restored faith in humanity, just to keep it on the upbeat for a minute. Enjoy this week's Our Flag. Greetings. A couple of episodes ago, I offered a challenge to my listeners. Identify the two cases where another flag could fly higher than the American flag, and one case where a different flag could fly to our flag's right. I'm Paul Master Sergeant Chez Sanchez, and this is Our Flag. So let's start with a flag that can fly to our flag's right. It's actually pretty obvious. Go to the United Nations. USC Title IV states, provided that nothing in this section shall make unlawful the continuance of the practice heretofore followed of displaying the flag of the United Nations in a position of superior prominence or honor, and other national flags in positions of equal prominence or honor with that of the flag of the United States at the headquarters of the United Nations. That's an only just there. And if I recall correctly, all of the flags at the United Nations are actually put alphabetically per the name of their country. So obviously we're at the way down towards the left side of that particular display. And yes, I know you guys saw that one coming. Now, let's work on the other two, however. How about a flag that can fly higher than the U.S. flag? In the same exact paragraph of USC 4, it discusses the church pennant. Quote, except during church services conducted by naval chaplains at sea, when the church pennant may be flown above the flag during church services for the personnel of the Navy. Now, the only logical reason I can find for this rule is actually from an atheist website. Quote, this is because it is not actually a Christian flag as such, but it is that of the chaplaincy and as such is considered a non-combatant and is protected during war. So in theory, a ship flying this flag on a Sunday cannot be fired upon during war as part of the Geneva Convention. That in a sense makes that particular ship a non-combatant because it's now become a church because of that flag being up there, which I would assume also means that the ship itself cannot be attacking anything at that point in time during a church service, same as hospitals and other things that are covered under the Geneva Convention. Now, I haven't been able to verify that particular bit of information anywhere, but it does seem very likely. And the last of the two times that another flag can fly higher than the U.S. flag, for one, you have to be in the military. Air Force Instruction 34-1201 states, the only exception is when the flag of the United States is flown at half-staff for an official observance, foreign national flags may be above the flag of the United States. Now, the reason is simple. We do not have authority over another nation's flag. Now, I doubt you'll ever see this happen. Here on Holloman Air Force Base, however, the German Air Force has two flags outside their headquarters. When I was the sergeant in charge of the Holloman Air Force Base Steel Talons Honor Guard, one of my responsibilities was to manage most of the flagpoles on the base. Under direct orders of the German wing commander, if our flag went to half staff on a weekend or holiday, I was to lower their flag in front of their headquarters before I lowered the U.S. flag. This was as a courtesy to our mourning and intended to show the great respect that the Germans have for our country and their stay here with us. Bottom line for this episode of Our Flag is never assume that you know everything about the proper display. Every time I prepare one of these, I spend hours researching the topic to ensure that I get it right. And almost every time I learn something new. Hopefully you've learned something also. If any listeners have questions or comments about the content of this series, I welcome you to post comments on my Facebook page, Those Who Show Up Decide. The script and reference notes from these spots will be posted in the notes section. I'm Paul Master Sergeant Chez Sanchez, and may God bless you, and of course, may God bless America.
This week's Our Flag has been brought to you by the Otero County Conservatives. Come meet with us every third Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. in the New Heart Cowboy Church in Alamogordo, New Mexico, on the corner of White Sands Boulevard and Fairgrounds Road. We welcome all who are interested in taking our country back to the constitutional basis from whence we came. Come early and meet everybody while grabbing a bite to eat at the Hitchin Post right next door. Pastor Coy Griffin makes an awesome barbecue. That's the Otero County Conservatives, meeting every third Thursday at 6 p.m. See you there. This is Melody Tapp Sanchez, signing off from thebigbasin.com. May God bless you and may God bless America.
Thank you, Melody, for that tag for my good friends over at the OCC. We're going to move forward in our show. I think I'm going to be able to put it all together for you here. First thing, we're going to do our Lost Faith and Restored Faith in Humanity sections. For that, we're going to the internet, and we are going to look at a story on FoxNews.com, pardon me, that talks about, now, to me, this lost faith is on both sides of the coin. Okay. First of all, everybody remembers the Aurora mass shooting. I can't remember the pinhead's name, but the guy that came in during the Batman premiere and back in 2012 and shot, let's see, this was for over 28 victims and their families. The attack killed 12 people and left more than 70 others injured. Now, what happened here is after the shooting, and of course that guy's in jail, and I think his case is over with, I'm not sure. What did happen is 28 of the families apparently sued Cinemark, the movie theater itself, and their point was they argued the nation's third largest theater chain should have done more to prevent the attack that killed and injured these people. They sued in state court, saying security lapses allowed for the attack at a midnight premiere of the Batman film. Now, apparently, a judge last week dismissed a similar lawsuit in federal court, and it was said that Cinemark's lack of security was not a substantial factor in the deaths. In both lawsuits, victims cited a lack of guards and no alarm on an emergency exit door that would have sounded when James Holmes slipped into the crowded theater and started shooting. Now, again, This was actually published June 30th, 2016. So a few weeks back is when this was taken care of, when this was published on Fox News, and I am quoting from this story. So number one, the victim sued the movie theater. Unless you live in an inner city, how many movie theaters do you know that have armed guards all around it patrolling? I personally don't think I've ever seen a movie theater with that. So I got to tell you, I absolutely feel for the victims and the tragedy that they suffered. The individual that did commit the attack is just a barbarian and a murderer, and yet another insane mental patient that should have never been allowed to be near a weapon. But I don't see it as a fault of the movie theater. So I got to tell you, I'm disappointed in the victims, and it brings me in mind of a very old joke, and that joke is, what is 10,000 lawyers, and I'm sorry, John, if my friend John Sugg is listening, but what's 10,000 lawyers on the bottom of an ocean? Well, of course, that's known as a good start. Very old joke. Obviously, some attorney talked these families into suing the movie theater. I guess if you can win that a cup of hot coffee spilled on grandma's lap is worth a couple of million dollars, I suppose you can sue a movie theater for not locking the back door. Either way, the victim sued, they lost. But here is the continuation of my lost faith in humanity, half of which is for the victims that attempted the lawsuit, which seems to me to be frivolous. Very unfortunate situation, but still frivolous. Apparently, Cinemark's attorneys now want Aurora massacre victims to pay $700,000 after their unsuccessful suit, because apparently in Colorado, Colorado courts allow the winning side of a court case to recover legal fees, which I on the one hand, absolutely agree with. If you sue and you lose, you should have to pay the winning side for their expense and effort and everything else. In this particular case, I can't see that Cinemark is doing anything for their publicity. They make billions, well, certainly millions of dollars on the movies that they show. Have you seen the cost of a freaking movie theater ticket recently? And they're going to try to sue the victims that sued them for $700,000. I suppose as a business decision, you'd want to recoup the money. On the other hand, as a publicity thing, I think Cinemark's going to take a huge hit for this particular attempt right here. I think both sides are just a bunch of pinheads. Victims shouldn't have started it, and the attorneys on the Cinemark side shouldn't be finishing it. So that is my lost faith in humanity, just a bunch of people doing silly things to each other. Now, on the restored faith, where did it go? I had it a minute ago. Okay, the restored faith in humanity comes from my savior site when it comes to these type of issues, for something positive to talk about, and it is from the KOB web, 4 website, which is KOB, KiloOscarBob.com. That's up in Albuquerque. And the KOB website has a tab on the top of it that is called Pay It Forward. And on the Pay It Forward site, there is a story about a woman pays it forward to the Chillilee, I think that's the name of the town, shop owner who helped evacuees of the fire. Fires in New Mexico have ruined lives and destroyed homes and property. Rebuilding often takes years, but in our state, tragedies like the Doghead Fire in the East Mountains last month bring neighbors together to help one another. And I guess it's a story about a general store in a town called Chillilee, which was on the edge of that Doghead Fire, stayed open, and as people were fleeing that fire, the hundreds of residents that were in there that had to flee the fire, he kept his store open, kept providing items, and apparently wasn't even that concerned about payment, certainly not at that moment in time. He just wanted to take care of people. So he just did whatever he could to help out in that situation. A woman saw the news story about this particular shop owner and what he was doing, and she called into KOB and said that she wanted to make him a Pay It Forward award winner, which is where KOB basically gives the gentleman $400 saying thank you for what you did. And so there's a really nice little video, KOB.com, Pay It Forward tab, that is well worth watching. It is a restored faith in humanity. You hear all the time of people gouging and price rigging in bad situations like this. He could start charging triple for gas. Instead, he just opened his store and let people take what they needed. And that is the kind of humanity that we need. So there's your lost faith. There's your restored faith. And now what we're going to go into, we got about 10 minutes left, is we're going to try to hit some of our local news. I want to briefly mention that we have a new under-sheriff, being that my good friend Darren Silen just took over the Alamogordo police chief position. He was the undersheriff for the Otero County Sheriff's Department. Well, Otero County Sheriff Benny House has named retired FBI Special Agent Lillian McDowell Schnell as his undersheriff on Wednesday. Apparently, she's a former, let's see, McDowell Schnell, 51, was born in Mexico, but immigrated to El Paso, Texas with her parents when she was 7 years old. She's an Irvin High School graduate. She taught school for a few years, both at the high school and university level in El Paso. And then we have a quote, and this is in the Alamogordo Daily News, by the way, article written by the editor, Dwayne Barbati. And she says that she applied with the Bureau, the FBI, as a joke. They took me. I didn't think they would take a teacher. I haven't looked back since. I was lucky to get in. When I did so, I could retire after 20 years, which is minimum retirement. In either case, she's got a lot of experience, training experience, other things that she's going to bring to the Otero County Sheriff's Department. She seems to be a good choice. And being that I happen to trust Benny immensely, and I know Darren in this article, it says that Darren had some input to the decision. I think it's going to be a great choice, and I look forward to seeing what she does. So the next, as promised, segment I'm going to do here very quickly is about an article by my acquaintance, Jacqueline Devine, in the Alamogordo Daily News. The headline reads, "Opposing groups to hold rallies for Forrest and against it." And honestly, if you read the story, I don't like the headline. I don't have a problem with the opposing groups in that she's asked both of them to contribute and make quotes, and they've done that. But I don't get which one is for and which one's against it, because I have an idea. I would say that the for Forrest people, that they're, this is just my opinion, is where she talks about Democrat Denise Lang, who's running for State House District 51 against Yvette Harrell. The incumbent will be at the counter-protest. I'll talk about the protest in just a second. Because her group believes that national public lands should remain public for the enjoyment and use of every American citizen, and the Stand By Me for Liberty organization, that's the original protest that's going to occur, are extremists. Now, what's stunning here, there's a quote by Lang that I'd like to read. "Americans from all 50 states and their ancestors have been paying to fight fires and manage our forests for over 100 years. Our state and county cannot afford to fight fires in our backyard." There's a minor problem with that. First of all, the mismanagement of our forest for the last many, many decades by the Bureau of Land Management and the Forestry Service, etc., has actually contributed to the amount of fires that have occurred. Their responses to those fires has been disastrous. You just read stories about any fire and you will be able to understand this. In fact, when I talked about that Restored Faith and the dead, the Chillily shop owner at that forest fire in New Mexico that stayed open and helped out people, that fire was actually started, unintentionally, but started by the federal forest people who were attempting to clear land, and one of their machines threw a spark, started a fire that cost, as usual, thousands of acres. So, Ms. Lang, I would much rather our individuals that live and have grown up for generations in Otero County manage our own forestry here in Otero County and New Mexico in general. I think the federal government has mismanaged it for decades. And speaking of mismanagement, the opposing group, or the original group that's out there for the protest, which I will be going to this protest, is the National Stand By Me for Liberty group. They're going to be holding their rally today, Saturday, July 9th, from noon to 3 p.m. at Alameda Park. Now, the opposing group is going to be on the corner of White Sands Boulevard and 10th Street, just down from Alameda Park. The quote from the Liberty group's director for New Mexico, Michael Bayless, says, "What we're doing out there is protesting the overreach of the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management that is encroaching upon ranchers' lands. They're fencing off their water up there and doing the same thing they did in Bunkerville, Nevada, and up in Oregon, where they're using the jumping mouse as an excuse, like they used the Mojave Desert tortoise in Nevada. These environmental groups like the Sierra Club and so many others are getting on board with the Forest Service and the BLM to protect an animal that's not in danger to begin with. Even if they are endangered, they're using that as a pretext to go after the ranchers, shutting off their water supplies that hinders the cows because they're not able to produce properly, and then send the IRS on them because they're behind on their payments on their taxes." Quick note, I absolutely agree with the overreach of the feds in these two particular organizations on what they are doing to our ranchers. And here's a thing I think people don't consider on the opposing side. Those evil, rotten ranchers that just want to water their cattle, if they ruin the land that, by the way, they've maintained themselves for hundreds of years, they have to have grass, they have to have water, they have to have the forest so that their cattle can graze off of those lands. If you destroy it, if you harm that environment, then their cattle can't produce, can't be butchered and made into the meat products that you pick up at Walmart. it interrupts our food supply. The ranchers are some of the greatest maintainers and conservationists that there are. And the environmental groups and the feds that come in and try to usurp state rights and some of these water leases and property rights that ranchers have had going back over 100 years is abysmal and well documented and should be stopped. So I will stand with the Stand By Me for Liberty group in a couple hours here at noon. When the majority of their event is over, I will probably drift down to watch Representative Lang doing her thing down on the corner of White Sands and 10th. And who knows, I may pick up a couple of interviews for next week's show. So the misleading headline again by the ADN is, which group is protesting for the forest and which group is protesting against the forest? I don't think either. I think they both believe that they know the right way to maintain the forest for not only wildlife, but also for future generations. I think they have vastly different views on how to do it. I don't think either one of them is against the forest. And I'm definitely offended because that's the latest thing for everybody to be. I'm offended by Ms. Devine's implication here. It would have been nice if she'd have flat out said, this organization is who I believe is for, this one's against. You can't just throw a headline out there without defining which one is which. And she did not define it in the article. So I think she needs to work on that a little bit. And with that said, what we need to do is do one more shout out for the show to my good friends Amy and John Paul down at 54 Towing and North 54 Salvage. They don't want an arm and a leg. They just want your toes. You can reach them at 575-585-9097. That's 575-585-9097. 54 Towing. Again, we don't want an arm and a leg. We just want your toes. They're there for all your towing needs right here in the Big Basin. So let's get to that last little bit I was going to throw in here just for fun this Saturday morning. We're going to read you the back cover or parts of it of the 1001 Dumbest Things Ever Said, which is not a book about Chez. So, in celebration of mental lapses and pure idiocy, here is a collection of stupid utterances, unintentional and otherwise, from the world of politics, radio, television, newspaper, show business, sports, and literature, and everywhere else people can and have put their feet in their mouths. There's about four quotes here. Let's see if we can get through them. Number one, smoking kills. If you're killed, you've lost a very important part of your life. That was actress Brooke Shields during an interview to become a spokesperson for a federal anti-smoking campaign. Outside of the killings, Washington has one of the lowest crime rates in the country. Mayor Marion Barry, Washington, D.C. Hawaii has always been a very... Hawaii has always been a very pivotal role in the Pacific. It is in the Pacific. It is a part of the United States that is an island that is right here. Former Vice President Dan Quayle. That would be the tomato guy. And finally, nobody in football should be called a genius. A genius is a guy like Norman Einstein. That was Joe Theismann, former NFL football quarterback and sports analyst. Proving once again that people can really say some dumb things. Hope I haven't depressed you too much with today's Those Who Show Up Decide. As always, I appreciate you tuning in and listening to my bloviating. If you want to see me, come down and yell at me at the Stand By Me for Liberty protest here in a couple hours. Take care till next week.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Those Who Show Up Decide with Alamogordo's very own privately commissioned Jim Henson creation. I'm talking about none other than that towering and talkative Alamogordian activist Paul Master Sergeant Chez Sanchez. Before we leave, don't forget to send your Chez Bomb cereal box tops, request for autographed portraits, wage garnishments, and restraining orders to thosewhoshow@hotmail.com. This has been Those Who Show Up Decide.